Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for sharing some of those lessons. They really encourage me to hear those. You can open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 9, and that confirms that Perry is a spirit-led man, because ironically, he read from Ecclesiastes this morning, so confirmation of that. I didn't say much about Jill and I last night. This May 11th, Jill and I will celebrate our 47th wedding anniversary. That just means we're old, is what that means. We have three daughters and 10 grandchildren between the ages of 16 and 8. Just got a picture this morning. The 8-year-old won her soccer championship. She's holding this big old trophy. So stuff is happening back home. They all live nearby at this point by the grace of God. And so when we're all together, it is bedlam. It's chaos and it's loud. We're a loud family. So it's a lot of fun. Just a reminder on the questions, just to text those in. I told Jill when Dave made that announcement, I said, oh, by the way, I text a question and just you'd be aware. Can Jill give five ways that she just loves and admires Mark? So hopefully we'll... just a little heads up there, love. Yeah.
Well, we heard the shower song.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's right. Last night I mentioned that our Bibles begin with a marriage in Genesis chapter 2. And this morning I want to remind us that our Bibles end with a marriage that is found in Revelation 19, as you well know, where we have recorded the marriage supper of the Lamb, where the bride, that's us, sit with our groom, our husband, Jesus Christ, and we feast and we delight in him for all of eternity. And that portrait of eternal joy, that portrait of joy and delight around that great banquet table with Christ informs our present life and informs our present marriages, and therefore we should see echoes of that joy and delight in our marriages today. It's not limited to eternity. Because of the grace of God, we should see some of that echoed in our marriage. So with that in view, this message is going to be more practical in nature. And the aim is to help us cultivate joy and delight in marriage. That's the title, Cultivating Joy and Delight in Marriage. And we're going to read from Ecclesiastes 9, verses 7 through 10, but really with a focus on verse 9. Go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun. Because, here's why, that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. May God bless the preaching and the hearing of the word this morning. Richard Baxter, you may know that name, was a 17th century Puritan pastor. He pastored in a little village called Kidderminster in southwest of Birmingham, England. And Margaret Charlton grew up in a wealthy home nearby in Shropshire, England, a few miles from Kidderminster, and she actually came to Christ under Richard Baxter's preaching. Richard and Margaret were married in 1662, 2 weeks after Baxter and 2,000 other Puritan pastors were excluded from their pulpits. They were kicked out of their pulpits by the king, for being nonconformist, which basically what that means is they would not stop preaching the true gospel. They would not stop preaching Reformed doctrine. Known as a key leader among the Puritans, Richard was dogged by spies until there was toleration when there was a new king in 1668. So for 26 years, Richard was the frequent object of slander, And on one occasion, he was arrested and imprisoned. Spies dogged Richard and Margaret for a number of years. So he and Margaret, they went to London, and they were forced to move from house to house because of some of the persecution they were facing. In some of those places where they lived, it was what historian Michael Haken calls wretched circumstances. One gets an idea of Martha's mettle, M-E-T-T-L-E, Martha's strength, her boldness, when Baxter tells us that at the time of his imprisonment in 1669, Margaret cheerfully went to prison with me. That's a strong woman, right? Despite the fact that it was illegal for Baxter to preach, Margaret more than once drew from her family's wealth, her inheritance, to pay for chapels to be built where Richard could continue to preach the gospel. On one occasion in 1673, Margaret asked Richard, "Where in London would you most like to preach?" And he said, there's a place in London, a community in London called St. Martin's Parish, and I want to preach there because I'm told there are at least 40,000 people who haven't heard preaching. They don't hear the preaching of the word, and that's where I would love to preach. So Margaret drew more from her family inheritance and had a chapel built in St. Martin's Parish. Despite the challenges they faced, Richard and Margaret managed to have a wonderful marriage. They delighted in one another. They had a joyful marriage. What was their secret? Michael Haken, again, a church historian, records it this way. These are his observations. I put this in your outline. First, they followed the advice Richard gave in his Christian directory when he urged married couples to delight in one another. When husband and wife take pleasure in each other, it unites them in duty. It helps them with ease to do their work and bear their burdens. Then he quotes Proverbs 5, "Rejoice with the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love." Proverbs 5, verses 18 and 19. Then they had a tremendous agreement about what ultimately mattered in life. This is what he says. "Nothing causes so near and fast and comfortable a union as to be united in one God, one Christ, one Spirit, one church, one hope of heavenly glory." See, having a biblical, God-centered, Christ-centered worldview, Richard and Margaret Baxter knew that God had given them a portion, as it says in Ecclesiastes. And that portion that God had given them, this gift, was to enjoy and delight in one another in the context of marriage. Genesis 2:24 says that God gives us the gift of marriage. We saw that last night. But God says here in Ecclesiastes 9:9 that I've given you this other gift, this portion. And that gift is that husband and wife are to delight in one another. You are to enjoy one another. And that, brothers and sisters, as Ecclesiastes says, that's our portion in this vain life that Solomon repeats over and over again, as you know, in this letter. See, a happy marriage where husband and wife delight in one another and their relationship reveals a God-centered marriage that keeps God's commandments. This would be one of them, and fears Him, fulfilling really what Ecclesiastes is written for, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13. So here's the question I want to answer. How do you and I, as husbands and wives, how do we cultivate joy and delight in marriage? So I've got six ways. So your outline says four ways. That's a typo. I must have got that point and added two more, and I didn't go back and change that. So six ways to cultivate joy and delight in marriage. First of all, cultivate input. Cultivate input. I have a document dated 2005. So that's 21 years ago. It's entitled Jill's Thoughts on Romance. I was drawing Jill out about how I could grow in romancing her as a husband, how I could grow in just bringing joy and delight in our marriage. And this is the first thing she told me. I put a quote from Jill in your outline there. when it comes to your day off, which is Mondays, I don't see an enthusiasm that says, I get to spend the whole day with you. Sometimes our path to joy and delight is not a happy path. We need input. I asked Jill, okay, you're not seeing, what do you mean by that? What do you mean I'm not showing this enthusiasm? She said, I think you need to grow, Mark, in being attentive to me. And that was really helpful to hear. I said, tell me what you mean by that. So attentiveness to Jill is that it's not just quantity time, it's also quality time, and that I'm not just present with her physically sitting beside her, but I am engaged mentally. I'm not checked out and thinking about something else. See, there are times that I am with her, but I'm really somewhere else. In my mind and in my thoughts, I'm thinking about something else, and that doesn't cultivate romance. It doesn't cultivate joy and delight in marriage. She went on to say this, in my attentiveness towards her, if I was more attentive, it would actually then stir her affections for me. So if I'm being attentive, then that's going to stir her affections for me. And then she said one other thing that I needed to grow in my consistency of pursuing her romantically, and that she used this phrase, all-day romance. All-day romance. Not just an event, not just one conversation, meaning that I'm consistently pursuing her. Now, I found that conversation really, really helpful, and I'm grateful that Jill was courageous enough and helpful enough to speak truth to me. See, I share all that because we can't assume that we know what will stir joy and romance in our spouses' hearts and lives. Therefore, we need to ask each other for input. So here's some questions I put in your outline, and you may have better questions, but here are the questions I put in there. Number one, what is the most romantic thing I've ever done for you? What is something that we can do that, number two, that would be fun for you? Number three, what is one thing I can do for you this week that will relieve stress from your life? I mean, just asking that question is thoughtful, right? Number four, how can I pray for you? And number five, if you could change one thing about our marriage, what would it be? And speak truth to one another and then buckle up and listen and get input. See, asking each other for input is helpful because just taking initiative, and it doesn't always have to be the guy, by the way. Let me mention that. I think it should be the guy. Don't get me wrong. It's not just husbands taking initiative. At times, it's good for wives to take initiative and just draw your husband out. But just taking the initiative, it communicates that your marriage is a priority. It communicates that you care about joy and delight and growing in romance in your marriage. Now, don't assume that if you've been married 40 years, right? If you've been married a long time, that you've had a lot of talk about this and you're all dialed in. You've got this thing all figured out. Don't assume that. That's what I've learned. As we've grown older together, Jill changes. She does. She keeps me on my toes. There are things that she used to like that she doesn't like anymore. For example, especially when the kids were younger, and even not that long ago, man, just one date night out, man, that was great. She loved that. She didn't have to cook. She'd go to one of our favorite restaurants. It's not really that anymore. Now what she wants is a whole week away, just her and I. Don't have the kids around. Come on, bud, up your game, right? That's one illustration of how she's changed. There are new things she loves now that I never thought she would love. And those I'm still trying to figure out. So the point is, as you grow older together, you change. And she keeps me on my toes. She really does. And that's a good thing. Because whether you're a young married couple still learning how to cultivate romance and stir joy and delight in your marriage, or whether you've been married for a longer period of time, you need to cultivate input by asking for it consistently over time. So you never have this one conversation you've arrived, or you're like, okay, we've been married 5 years, we got that figured out. No, you don't. At least Jill and I don't. she changes, and I'm sure I do as well. So cultivate input. Second way, cultivate study of your spouse. Cultivate study of your spouse. Of course, we want to consistently ask our spouse for input so that we can grow, but cultivate the practice of studying your spouse. Study your spouse and carefully ask, what do they really enjoy doing? What puts a smile on their face? What makes them laugh? And that's going to be different for different couples. What restaurants are their favorites? For Jill, the favorite, at least at this point, unless it changes in the next couple of weeks, the favorite is a place called The Whip. It's in western Chester County. It's in horse country, as we call it. It's an English pub, and it really does look like you've been to England, an English pub. And I know what she's going to order every time, because she orders it every time. Welsh rarebit for a appetizer, where we sit there and enjoy that. And then she orders English onion soup and then sticky toffee pudding for dessert. That's a winner right there. That's a winner. We just that's a go-to place for us because we've had so many wonderful conversations there. I know that if I want to surprise her and bless her, we just want a night just to laugh, we can go to The Whip because I've studied that with her. Ask them, if you could go anywhere, where would that be? Ask your spouse that. I think if I were to ask Jill right now, anywhere that she would want to go, it would be a little bit hard for her to answer because on one hand, she would say, I want to be anywhere the grandkids are at. Okay, let's say we rule the grandkids out of our little trip, all right? I know she would want to go to Hawaii. She has wonderful memories. When she was growing up, her dad owned 5 Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise restaurants. What a godly man, right? And he started in the mid-70s or early 70s, and nobody knew what a triglyceride was or an HDL cholesterol. And so her dad was, man, he was selling a lot of chicken, and he was making some coin. And so they had these Kentucky Fried Chicken franchisee conventions in different parts of the country, and she made at least 3 trips to Hawaii attending those. She's got pictures with her family and Colonel Sanders standing right there. And so there's wonderful memories for her of Hawaii. So that would be one of the favorite places I know she wants to go to. Well, ask your spouse what relaxes them. And when you ask that, you've got to know whether your spouse is an active or passive rester. Here's what I mean by that. Jill, Jill's a passive rester, meaning that she would just lay on the beach in Hawaii and read a book, and that would be great. And she doesn't have to cook. That would be relaxing for her. All right, there we go. Get an amen for that. For me, I'm just an active guy. I don't know if you know this, but there are some sharks, species of sharks that have to keep moving or they die. A great white shark is that way. They have to keep moving because that's the only way they can, quote, breathe. And so I can have that mentality. I'm a great white shark type of guy. I've got to keep moving. And that includes my rest. So Jill likes to lay on the beach. I love to hike. Yeah, how do we figure that out as a married couple, right? So you've got to know whether you're an active or passive, whether your spouse is an active or passive rester when you ask that. And you ask that question. There needs to be compromises along the way. As you get older together, the diligence of studying your spouse does not change. It doesn't. So, as I mentioned, Jill has changed over time. So for a number of years, I could stop by on the way home. If I wanted to surprise her, just a really small gift that she would take a lot of delight in, I would stop by the grocery, and I would pick up a package of cherry-flavored Twizzler licorice, right? And I'd bring those home, and I would surprise her and, you know, say some affectionate things to her. And she loved those. And so one day I just thought, you know, I'm going to surprise her tonight. I drive home. I pick up the cherry Twizzlers. I come in the house, and I present them to her in a delightful way. And she goes, I don't like those anymore. Oh, okay. What do you like? You know, it's got that moment. I mean, the air went out of the room. We weren't delighting in that moment. So I just studied her, and I noticed she had a package of Twizzlers. And I finally was able to look at the packaging. They are chocolate-flavored Twizzlers. Yeah, exactly. Look on your face. They are a rarity. They really are. They're hard to find. So when I find them now, I buy a bunch of them and store them away so I can surprise her. See, her tastes have changed over time. She moved from cherry to chocolate. She brought some on the trip, the chocolate Twizzlers, as an example. Yeah. My point is this. Studying your spouse is a lifelong endeavor. You never figure one another out, which I think is a wonderful thing, because you learn new things about one another, and that can cultivate joy and delight in marriage simply by studying, looking for ways to surprise and delight and stir joy in your marriage. Okay, number three, cultivate consistent communication. Now, of course, especially if you have children, but even if you don't, maybe you've got grandchildren, consistent, or even if you don't have children or grandchildren, you have to have consistent communication about the business of life, right? There's schedules. We can't leave a kid somewhere, so who's picking somewhere up? And we've left kids in places, by the way. So I get this need for this business of life conversation. There's issues with the house that need to be fixed, but make sure that you as spouses don't allow the business of life to consume all of your conversation. And that can very easily happen, because then you get to the end of the day and you're tired and you got to map out the next day, and then you just want to go to sleep. You can't allow that to happen every day. And so Jill and I tried to do something early on in our marriage to cultivate that kind of consistent communication outside the business of life. So our three girls were younger, and we had the bleeding rule in our home. The bleeding rule. So what that meant was that when I came home from work, the first 30 minutes I had with Jill. Of course, we greeted our daughters. I love my daughters. They love me and love Jill more. And so I would greet them, but I would say, okay, the bleeding rule's in effect. And so for 30 minutes, we would go in our bedroom and we would close the door. And the bleeding room was, you may not disturb, you may not knock on that door unless you're bleeding. Now, I'm not talking small paper cut where one of your sisters can put a Band-Aid on it. I'm talking like hemorrhaging, bleeding, and you got to go to the emergency room. Then you can knock on the door. Then we want to know. And I would take 30 minutes. Now, sometimes it had to be business of life stuff. Sometimes Jill just needed to download some frustration from the day. But we also took time to talk about other things. And as one of you mentioned, it teaches your kids a lot about marriage. It teaches them that your home is not child-centered. And it teaches them that your spouse is the priority. So it teaches them a lot about marriage, but it cultivates among you as spouses this ability to have consistent conversation outside of the business of life. Now, that's only a practice. That practice may not work in your home. I'm not saying you need to institute the bleeding rule in your home, but there are practices that may work for you as well. The point of saying all this is don't ignore the principle in it, though. Use whatever practice works, but the principle is this. Does your spouse know that he or she is a priority and you want to talk with them and listen to them? Not just about the business of life, but about other things. Does your spouse know there is no rival? There's no rival, whether that's work or whether that's the kids. There is no rival. Another thought just about communication, by the way. As I mentioned, you have to talk about the business of life, the kids, the schedule, the home, et cetera, et cetera. But the business of life conversations, they can be endless. They really can. They feel that way to Jill and I, which is why you must purpose to talk about other things. You got to have conversation about politics, maybe, or sports, or music, or news events, or books that you're reading. They go a long way in cultivating friendship. I think you guys know Josh Blunt, right? Yeah, Josh Blunt's been here. He's a pastor in Franklin, West Virginia. Really bright man, smart theologically. He is married to Anna. They live in Franklin, West Virginia. And we were in Franklin, West Virginia in November, and we were in their home, and there's all these pictures of birds on their wall. Because Josh and Anna like to go birding together. They're a real nerd couple, let me tell you. And so they've taken trips. I mean, Josh taught at our pastor's college in Germany last year, and he took Anna, not to go with him, but they had a whole separate week after he taught to go some places in Germany I've never heard of that he told us about to photograph certain birds that are now hanging on their wall in the home. And so as they walked us around their home, and we're looking at these birds, just, you know, being happy with them, of course, what I noticed is how they would look at one another and smile. And they just delight in doing birding together. It deepens their friendships, their friendship. They actually talk about birds a lot. But they're very good friends, because good friends talk a lot about other issues than the business of life. There's no one I would rather talk with than Jill. No one I'd rather spend time with than her. It's a delight. And as we've grown older, we haven't run out of things to talk about. We haven't. Our conversations have only become sweeter by the grace of God. Study your spouse and look for what does he or she really like to talk about. So here's Jill's list: politics. She likes to talk politics. She likes to talk about the weather. I call her radar at times because she's pulling out the weather and she's showing me the map and all of that. I'm like, I'm trying to be interested in the weather because she likes to talk about that. She likes to talk about sports. She loves to go on estate sales or to thrift shops, especially with our daughters. That really delights in her. And so when I see a headline about politics, hey, did you hear? Yep, I'm on it. We'll talk about it. Or I know she's been at an estate sale with one of our daughters. Say, hey, how'd that go? And she tells me about all her finds, which is great. You know, that's I listen and I delight with her. One other thing about conversation. So those are happy things. We all walk through trials together as married couples, don't we? And talking through your trials together can actually be used to unite you, not divide you. That's what we've learned. Some very hard things. We have, as I mentioned, 3 daughters and 10 grandchildren. Our middle daughter has walked through a real trial for many, many years now. One that Jill and I never thought we would have to walk through with her. She was married for 12 years. She has 2 beautiful daughters who are 16 and 13. And after she got married, maybe a year in, really, as I remember, maybe a year in, fairly quickly, our relationship with them kind of changed. And she married a guy who grew up in the church, was born again through our Bridge program. That's kind of like the Alpha Course or Christianity Explored, and just on fire for the Lord. But as their marriage progressed, our relationship changed with them. And to make a very long story short, we learned that it was an abusive marriage. She had been sexually abused, emotionally abused, and it began to get physical. And that's when she moved out. She had left a few times. He had actually kicked her out a few times. And she went back because she was trying to hold this family together. And it became too much. In December of 2018, she moved in with us. And her 2 girls have lived with us for half the time. Kelly's there full time. And there's been some recent events where, because their dad has been a bit unstable, that they've had to live full time with us, which we're very grateful for. We're glad that our home is a safe place. We've learned a lot. It's a trial that breaks our hearts for her and for our grand girls. But we've talked a lot through it. And It's the hardest thing we've walked through together at this point, I would say. Yeah, you would agree. And yet the conversation, there's two effects in our marriage. One, we've never prayed more together. Never. Number two, we've never talked so much in a way that we had to help each other find our hope in God. And there were days that she wasn't doing well and I helped her, and there were days that I wasn't doing well and she helped me. Aren't you grateful for that? You've probably had a similar experience. And so there can be times when we are having conversations, not just about that situation, but it can be something else with one of our adult daughters where they're doing something, or their husband, and they're making a decision. We're like, oh man, that decision is really going to hurt. Or we're looking at some parenting issues and we're like, you got to do something, and they're not, you know. And you're at that season of life where you've got to say, okay, when do you play your card and when do you keep your mouth shut? And we're still learning all of that, actually. So there are times when Jill sits, I come home from work and she says, I need to talk with you. And she just starts talking about, you know, one of those issues. And I had to learn something, because I would stop her early on and I'd say, you can't say that to them. Well, that's not what I'm telling you. I just want to tell you. So then I had to learn, when I came home and we had one of those conversations, I had to very early on ask or say, are you just telling this to me? Which is fine, I want you to. Or are you going to say that to one of our daughters? Because you can't say that to one of our daughters. She says, I'm only telling you. I'm just like, okay, let me have it. And that conversation, it unburdens her, is what it does. And what it does is it brings us closer together through trial, through difficult trial. See, we should, as husbands and wives, be able to say things to one another that we wouldn't say to anybody else. Because that cultivates intimacy, and it cultivates closeness. Some of it might be joyful, and some of it may not, but it will cultivate intimacy. Walking through trials together, it deepens your relationship and the friendships that you share, even the difficult things. All right, number four, cultivate romance. Ecclesiastes 9:9 says, enjoy life with the wife whom you love. Romance in marriage stirs joy and delight. And how you cultivate romance will vary. That'll vary from marriage to marriage. But it's also why you need to study your spouse and get input from your spouse so that you can learn how to better romance one another. Do things like plan and keep on the schedule date nights. Do those date nights. Keeping a date night communicates to your spouse that your marriage is a priority, and that not just a priority, but your desire to have joy and delight in your marriage is a priority. Plan and take trips together, overnights together. So a couple of, I was putting this together, and two trips immediately came to mind. So I mentioned one of Jill's favorite places, Hawaii. For a number of years, she wanted to go to Hawaii, and I'm like, I have no interest in going to Hawaii. But it held so many rich memories for her. I finally got to a place, I'm like, this is not about what I like. This is about going with her and entering into these memories with her. And so in 2018, we took a trip to Hawaii together. That was the first time that I had been. It was probably your fourth time there. And I liked it, actually. I liked Hawaii, which was really helpful. But what was helpful, what was a joy for me was to go to places she had been to before and tell me the memories there. That just brought a lot of happiness into her life. The other trip was, Jill and I grew up in the Midwest. We went to Purdue, and she is a sports fan, as I mentioned. And so Purdue was out on the east. The Big Ten's changed, as you know. Oregon's in it now. But the advantage of it changing is that Rutgers is in the Big Ten. They're up in northern New Jersey. So I got tickets for us to go see Purdue play Rutgers in college basketball. And I planned a trip where we got a hotel in Princeton, New Jersey, and then took the train from Princeton up to the game in Rutgers, because it's a little crazy traffic around New York up there, and went to the game. Purdue won, which was great. That adds to the memory. And then we came back, spent the night in Princeton, and before we went home, went to the graveyard there in Princeton where Jonathan Edwards is buried, if you didn't know that. It's just this wonderful trip and memory that we have together. So plan events like that. Okay, here's another one. Consider writing poems to one another. Ooh, that one's going to stretch you a little bit, right? It stretched me when someone was encouraging me to do this because I'm not creative. I can't write poems, but I'm going to read one I wrote for Jill to you. And this poem that I wrote to Jill and then read to her is about how our dating relationship started. So I've known her since I was 15 years old. I was a high school kid, got a job in one of her dad's Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants. And that's how we met. And we became friends, and it was about 4 years later, we were about 19, that we actually started dating. There's a funny story behind that. But I won't go into the funny story because let me tell the poem. Surprised you were on that day when I leaned over and kissed you before you went your way. A love was born between you and me. I couldn't have imagined what a wonderful love it would be. We talked that weekend late into the night. It began a pattern of conversation in which you and I delight. And still eager to see each other at the end of every day to share together what providence has brought our way. Last stanza. I look back on that September weekend with great fondness. A simple friendship turned into real romance. For I can't imagine going through this life with anyone but you. Dearest friend, wisest counselor, my greatest joy, I love you more than ever, and by grace, may it always be so. That's my poem.
That's good, Mark.
Okay, all right, good.
Yeah. You set the bar too high.
Yeah, I got other ones aren't so good. That's what she said. Can share those later if you want to.
Give us the real one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, not the 8-1.
Yeah, not the
8-1. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's funny. I mean, honestly, that poem's pretty lame, but it means a lot to us. And guys, if I can do that, and I'm not creative, I'm really not. It probably took me 30 hours to write that poem. But I wanted to communicate something to her that we still treasure about that September day. So guys, if I can do it, my point is you can do it as well. I mentioned last night the mundane. Don't miss how in the mundane we can cultivate joy and delight. As I said, I think for most of our growth as Christians happens in the mundane of everyday life. It does. It's not in those big events with God. We want those. And there might be some, you know, seasons where we grow fast, and that's great. But I think most of the Christian life, work is done. God does his work in the mundane. And I share that because, as I mentioned last night, the person that Jill calls if we're having a conflict and our unity's being affected, is she calls Rob Flood. Rob and Gina Flood are our community group leaders, and we've known them for a long time. They have a wonderful marriage, Rob and Gina. They have children, and it was our granddaughter Lucy, our oldest granddaughter, 16 years old, who went to the Floods and did an overnight with one of their daughters, Elizabeth Flood. And Lucy came home to her parents, our oldest daughter Tracy and Rick, and they said, "How was the overnight at the Floods?" And Lucy said, "Man, Mom, they kiss a lot." They kiss a lot. They're holding hands. They hug a lot. You and Dad don't do that. Ooh, that hurt. That one. You and Dad don't do that piece. In the mundane of everyday life, and if you spend time with Rob and Gina, that's who they are. They show affection towards one another, regardless of what they're going through in the mundane of life. So, kiss one another often. Even in the mundane, not just when you come home, or not just when you leave, go to work. Kiss often. Hold hands while you're watching TV or reading next to one another. It cultivates intimacy. It also has the benefit of teaching your kids something about marriage, about teaching them about joy and delight. Openly express your love and affection for one another. Be specific. Things like, "One of the reasons I so love you fill in the blank. And say those things to your spouse often. See, the person who lives a life with God and follows God, keeps this portion of Ecclesiastes 9:9 in view. It says, enjoys, I put the spouse whom you love. It says the wife, but I changed that to spouse. Hopefully I won't drop dead here. But enjoy the spouse you love. All right, fifth, cultivate surprise. One of the things that Jill and I have done, we've learned to do over the years, is to plan surprises for one another. Let me just give you a couple of illustrations. Jill planned a trip to Phoenix, Arizona. I think it was March. It wasn't February. I think it was March during spring training. I grew up a lifelong Cubs fan. I'm still a lifelong Cubs fan. They do spring training in Mesa, Arizona, a suburb of Phoenix. So she planned this whole trip. She got the airline tickets. She purchased spring training tickets for the Cubs. I forget who we saw. I think the Dodgers, actually, if I remember right. I forget who it was. And she worked with my administrative assistant, Aaron Redano, and they had worked together, conspired against me to put all these meetings in my calendar. And I looked at my calendar. I'm like, man, I got a busy week coming up. And not knowing they were all fake. And I go to work. I think it was on a Tuesday morning, if I remember right. And I get a call. I think it was from Aaron. I can't remember. Oh, that's right. You showed up at my office and said, you got to come home and pack a bag. We've got to be at the airport in 2 hours. I'm like, I can't. My schedule's jammed. And she said, that's all fake. Aaron filled your calendar up. You're going with me. And so I went home. I packed a bag. I said, where are we going? I'm not going to tell you where you're going. Think warm weather. And so I packed a bag, and we drove to the airport. They didn't have mobile boarding passes then, so I didn't know where we were headed until I printed a boarding pass. We're going to Phoenix. I couldn't understand why we're going to Phoenix. I wasn't thinking about spring training, and then it suddenly dawned on me. Oh, everybody had Cubs hats on. That's right. That's right. So anyway, we just had a great time. We went to the spring training game. We went to the Grand. We got a trip up to the Grand Canyon Inn. It's a wonderful memory for us. It was a wonderful surprise that cultivated joy and delight in our marriage. Let me tell you when I planned for Jill. She would say at this point, best surprise ever. Is that still true? Okay. All right. So I had this was 3 years ago. Yeah, probably about 3 years ago, our pastor's conference is in Orlando, and it finished on November 13th, her birthday, November 13th, and she is a huge Disney fan. So that's a difference we've had to work through. I didn't grow up a Disney fan. I didn't like Disney. I've learned to like Disney. In this way, when we go, a couple of things happen. She just changes. She has a lot of joy and delight. And my girls and I have noticed this. She walks at a pace we've never seen before. When we're in Disney World, I'm just like, you can't keep up with her. I mean, she's got to get everything in, and we aren't stopping, and we're closing this park down. If you're tired, that's your problem. That's how we enter Disney World. So she didn't know I planned this. So I worked with I said, Jill, we're going to stay just a few extra days, just you and I. Let's just stay. I think we got a hotel at one of the Disney resort type things, because she really likes that. And we're just going to stay a few days. So I'm gonna book flights later. We come home Monday, I think it was. And the conference ended on Thursday night. So I said, but I'm going to rent a car for the conference, and then we're going to have to go on Friday morning and drop the car off at the airport, and then we'll just Uber the rest of the time. So we get checked out of the hotel. We drive to the airport, and we're driving around. And she said, hey, you missed the rental car drop-off. I'm like, oh, man, I just got to go back around the airport again. So I drove back around, and I pulled up, and I stopped where I'd been texting with my girl. She didn't know what gate they had come out of or what door they would come out of after baggage claim. And I pulled up, and I stopped. She didn't see them initially. She said, what are you doing? what are we doing here? And I just sat there. I just kind of looked out the window, and she turned, and there were our three girls, and she just began to weep. She just cried, and she just got out of the car and hugged them, and I'm going to go return the car. I'll come back, and we'll just Uber together. And we had this wonderful time together. It is that surprise was planned, because it creates joy and delight in marriage. So planning surprise trips or overnights or just a surprise date night, a spontaneous date night, can cultivate joy and delight in marriage. And cultivating surprise requires, again, studying your spouse and getting input and being on a constant search for how I can bless my husband or how I can bless my wife. It also requires some planning, so you've got to think ahead. All right, sixth and last way, cultivate memories. So purpose to cultivate memories, whether through surprise trips like those I just mentioned or a dinner out. I mentioned the Whip. We still talk about a meal we had at the Whip the week between Christmas and New Year's. We had been out to Lancaster County, that's where the Amish are, and I had bought Jill a big dining room table that had extension because we were having trouble fitting all the grandkids around. So we got that ordered, and we were coming back home, and we stopped at the Whip on an afternoon. We walked in. It was probably about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it like there was only one or two other people in there, so it felt like we had the place to ourselves, and we're just sitting there talking, and it begins to snow outside, and we're just having this wonderful memory while fireplace is burning there. It's just a wonderful memory we share. It was a spontaneous, I don't think I planned that one. I think, let's just go to the Whip. Let's do that. You've got to be able to do things like that that create memories that only you and your spouse share. We actually went to Hawaii last year. We went back. I think this is my third time now. You proud of me for that? Third time? Not yet. Okay. This was a different trip. So all of our kids and grandkids went to Hawaii together. So 17 sinners going for 8 days together. We prayed a lot. We were able to do it because our oldest daughter, she just studies travel, and she knows which credit cards to get and how you work miles. And so we covered all the hotel and all the flights on these points that we had earned. And I said to Tracy, you are done managing our life. You've done it for a year. It's done. It's done. But she knew how to do it. And we had such a great time together. But they went home on the 8th or 9th day, and I said, I told you, we're going to stay another 5 days. So we stayed another 5 days, and we just had a great time together. But do you remember last summer, there was an earthquake just off the coast of Russia, and there were tsunami warnings in Hawaii. So Jill really wanted to go on this, what's that called, Amalfi Coast? No. Amalfi Coast on Kauai, this tour. So you got to get in this boat, and they go really fast. It's kind of a raft boat. They're bouncing all over. And we're about an hour into this, and everybody, there's like, I don't know how many people on that boat, 15 people or so, and everybody's phone starts blowing up. And we're all getting tsunami warnings on our phone, and we're out in the ocean. And so the captain says, you know, I'm looking at the weather, and I think we can still get this in. You guys up for it? Sure, that's kind of what we did. So then we're getting texts from home. Where are you at? We didn't tell them where we were at. There's a tsunami. You know there's a tsunami. You got to get to. So we did part of the tour, and all of a sudden, he just turns that boat around, and we booked it back. And we got up to the dock. He said, that was the fastest time I've ever run. So he said, get to higher ground. So we got to higher ground and went into Lihue in Kauai, and it was only an event on one side of the Kauai up on the north side. It caused flooding, but we have a tsunami memory. Next day, we were in a gift store, and already there's T-shirts. I survived the tsunami of 20. They know how to market there, I got to tell you. So we just have these memories. See, you as a couple should have memories that only you share together, just husband and wife. Memories that create intimacy and closeness and delight. Now, I've mentioned Hawaii. That's expensive. You don't have to do that. I could give you examples. Those are just the ones that came to mind that didn't cost us money at all or cost us much. Don't miss the principle that you've got to study your spouse. You've got to ask for input. You've got to plan. Because joy and delight in marriage just doesn't happen. You've got to be real intentional. And the reason you've got to be intentional is, as a Christian, it's a gift God's given you. It's a portion God has given you. As Ecclesiastes says, in this vain life. He says life is hard, but in this vain life, here's your portion. Delight in your spouse. Cultivate joy and delight in marriage. It is a good portion that God's given you. Let me pray. Lord, we thank you for this gift that you've given us here in Ecclesiastes 9:9. And I pray for every marriage here, including our marriage, that the marriage that I have with Jill. I pray that you would help each of us by your grace to lead this retreat with a greater intentionality to cultivate joy and delight in marriage. And I pray that in each of these homes there would be laughter and joy. Even in the difficulties, Lord, even those that might be walking through trials now that arrive here walking through difficulties of some kind, use even those difficult conversations to stir intimacy with one another, God. They might be hard to rejoice in, but you can use them to stir intimacy. Do that in every married couple's life. But here's the reason. It reflects your goodness towards us in giving us this gift. And as we learned last night, it reflects how Christ just delights in his bride and how the bride, the church, delights in him. Do that for your glory, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.